April 29, 2005. Good afternoon, committee. And we will open with a work session on House Bill 3081. Mr. Schlack, please come forward. Committee, we have -4 amendments to this bill, but it is the chair's intention to move the bill out today.
Good afternoon, Mr.
Schlack. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Art Schlack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And if you recall at your last hearing, there was some discussion of this bill, and I and several other people formed a work group to work with Representative Smith to help draft the -4s. To address the problem that was identified by the Newberries. And very briefly, Mr. Chair, the Newberries were involved with a piece of property that they acquired, and it may have transferred hands more than once at this point, where there was a land use decision historically, but the conditions of that land use decision were not fulfilled. And as such, there was a cloud placed over the properties that the Newberries have, and there's a need to remove that cloud. And the -4 amendments provide an opportunity for a governing body of a county to approve an application to create one parcel. If the county issued a land use decision approving the parcel prior to January 1st, 1994, and then there's a set of conditions that relate to that the parcel was either approved as part of a land use decision or a plat where the conditions of approval were not fulfilled at this point. This, I would just clarify, only deals with the one lot that would be subject to the application. It does not address the other lots, so they remain with a cloud still on them. And it will take an action by those by that property owner or those property owners to remove the cloud that is still remains on their piece of property at this point. There may be other parcels other than the Newberries that in the state that will meet this fact situation. So this is narrow but yet broad that it is, has statewide application at this point. I'm happy to convey to you that the Association of Oregon Counties, Multnomah County, TLCD, have reviewed this, and we all would recommend that you endorse the -4 amendments and move the bill forward with a DPAS recommendation.
Mr. Schlack, do you know of any opposition to the bill with the -4 amendments?
Mr. Chair, I do not.
Any questions of Mr. Schlack? Okay, thank you.
Thank you
very much. The chair will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3081 with the amendments.
I will have to adopt the -4.
I'm sorry, I did that this morning. I move the -4 amendments.
Representative Anderson has moved the -4 amendments into House Bill 3081. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Ackerman?
Aye.
Greenlee?
Aye.
Nolan?
Yes.
Anderson?
Aye.
Smith? Aye. Sumner?
Aye.
Chair Gruff?
Chair votes aye. The -4s are made a part of House Bill 3081. Committee, when we've been looking at this bill and had the public hearing, it becomes apparent that there certainly are some bigger issues in regards to illegal land divisions in the state. So I'm going to ask Representative Smith and Representative Greenlick to head up a work group that may extend into the interim to discuss the issues of illegal land divisions, and I'll leave the two of you free to involve whomever you wish. Would you both agree to that?
I certainly would. Thank you, Chair Garrard. I think it's long overdue.
Thank you, Representative Smith and Representative Greenlick. The chair now will entertain a motion. Please.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3081 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Anderson has moved House Bill 3081 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Ackerman?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Nolan?
Yes.
Anderson?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Sumner?
Aye.
Chair Gerard?
Chair votes aye. House Bill 3081 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Representative Smith will carry.
I will.
Representative Smith will carry.
Thank you very much, committee.
We will bypass House Bill 2956 in that because of the information that the Senate may have already closed down its committees. There's a certain amount of maneuvering that is now going on, and House Bill 2956 is one of those bills that are being maneuvered. So we're putting that off to next week. So we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3365. And I'll ask Rick Walker. Rick, if you'll come forward, and Max Mueller. And Max, I know you're here for Representative Dingfelter.
Yes.
Who is one of the sponsors of this bill. So I'll let you go forth, but first we'll have Sam tell us about the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 3365 will authorize division of a lot or parcel that is in a designated forest land if one of the or more of the resulting parcels would be sold to a provider of a public park or who would use that land remaining as open space attributes of the remaining parcels and otherwise one of the properties would be available for residential development. I will point out that there is a dash 3 amendment that came in just a little while ago, and I think I'd like to have the Max go over this in a little more detail. My understanding is that one of the issues that they were talking about would be had to do with the county's minimum lot provisions, and so the question became, what if during the partitioning of a piece of property so that some portion of it could then be set aside to a wilderness group or wetlands group or whatever, a park, that the remaining parcel would then fall underneath a minimum lot size. So I believe that was the intent, would be to exempt that from county standards, but I've only had a handful of minutes to actually look through that. I think the panel can elaborate that a little bit clearer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Matt, you want to start off?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Gerard and members of the committee. My name is Max Mueller, and I'm legislative aide to Representative Jackie Dingfelter. She couldn't be here today, and I am here testifying on her behalf in favor of House Bill 3365 and the dash 3 amendments to that bill. I would like to just give you a brief overview of the bill. I can try to address the committee administrator's questions. And I'd also like to first introduce the people on the panel with me. To my right is Mr. Rick Walker. He is a constituent of Representative Dingfelter's, and he brought this problem to us. He works as an appraiser with PGP Evaluations in Portland, and he encountered the problem we're trying to solve in his work appraising land for the Wetland Conservancy. And he's going to go into more detail about how he encountered this problem after I speak. And Ron Eber is here from the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and he's going to give the department's perspective on this bill. House Bill 3365 is the goal of it is to allow owners of land parcels that meet the criteria for development or for building a dwelling to sell off a portion of their land for conservation purposes without losing the ability to build that dwelling. And that means that if an Oregonian wanted to build a retirement home on a parcel that only barely meets a county's minimum lot size requirements, they could do so after selling off a portion of the land to a conservation group, such as a land trust, wetland conservancy. We think that the bill enhances the rights of property owners while streamlining the efforts of conservation groups that are working to preserve the unique character of our resource land and environmentally sensitive areas. And I think that in response to the committee administrator's question about the intent of this bill, I think you were correct about the intent. The intent is to allow situations where counties' minimum lot size would otherwise prohibit the division of the land, to allow that division to take place if it the purpose of the division is sale to a conservation group, and the landowner would maintain his ability to build a dwelling on the land. We see this as a fix to a relatively simple problem. We're not giving anyone new development rights. We're simply maintaining rights that otherwise exist, and would, under current law, the homeowner would be prohibited, would have a disincentive to sell to a conservation group, because doing so, in doing so, he would sacrifice his ability to build a dwelling. So, and that's I would like to turn it over to Mr. Rick Walker. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you.
Mr. Walker, good afternoon and welcome.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for taking your time to listen to my proposal here. What I've done is I've prepared a real brief PowerPoint presentation here to keep me on track so I don't take up too much of your time. I have one example here that I'm going to use that I ran into. This is not the specific property, because as a real estate appraiser, we get into problems if we talk specifics in terms of our ethics and our state licensing. But I'm going to give you an example of a timber conservation property in the Yaquina Bay area that a conservation group wanted to purchase a portion of. And the reason why these conservation groups want to start buying these habitat areas in fee is to give them more control and to also eliminate the overlap of ownership, and as family members change the perspective of what the land use rights are on the conservation easements. This has typically been facilitated in the past through conservation easements, and property owners and conservation groups are looking to go more for fee type transactions, so there's a clear demarcation of where ownership responsibilities go. And what I have is the situation is in resource lands. As we know, we got an 80-acre minimum. The subject for this discussion is a 40-acre parcel. It's owned timber conservation. The property meets the template test. As the real estate appraiser, I would research that, determine that there was value there, that it could be used for timber purposes, and also it could be used for residential purposes. That I do a financial feasibility analysis to determine its highest and best use. The buyer or the potential buyer wishes to purchase a portion of it. I just threw up 15 acres. It could be 5 acres. It could be more. The remaining tract, here's where the issue comes in. The owner is going to be left with the remaining tract after this usurper partial acquisition occurs. And that's going to be a 25-acre site in this example. But what changes in terms of that ownership's bundle of rights is that 25-acre parcel now becomes an illegal lot of record, and he can't qualify for any consideration of any of the uses that are allowed within that timber conservation zone, where in the before situation, when he owned the 40 acres, he could apply through for a temporary dwelling or whatever uses that were allowed. So what that does is that the buyer, which is typically funded through some public agency or through some conservation group, excuse me?
You go back.
Sure.
I'm not trying to say what's that.
I think I can. Oops.
Yeah.
There's an 80 acre minimum, and this is a 40.
It's already below the minimum. The lot is already below the minimum. It could be a 90-acre lot, and they want to buy 20 acres. Anything that pushes the remainder property below the minimum lot size, what you've done is you've created an illegal lot of record, and it no longer qualifies.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I could clarify that, Ron Eber for the department. The 80-acre minimum would bar the 40 acres from being divided. In any event, I wouldn't necessarily characterize the remaining 25-acre piece, if you could divide it, as an illegal unit. But being in that smaller size, it likely might not then still qualify for the template dwelling that it might have when it was still at the 40-acre size. And so the bill is aimed at creating some flexibility to the 80-acre minimum lot size. So the result that Mr. Walker is talking about is the same. I just wouldn't characterize it as an illegal parcel, but it's the same thing.
Continue.
Are we okay?
Okay, so what that forces is that the buyer is now in a situation where they have to come up with a substantial amount of additional money, because the remainder has been damaged. There's no home site there. The buyer also, if he's using public funds, he's restricted to the fact that he can only pay the amount that it's allowed by the federal uniform standards for federal land acquisitions, which means that if they're only buying a portion of it, they can only pay for the portion of it. And what happens is that the seller, if he had bought that property for home site development purposes, and these are these transitional areas where you run into this issue more than not, he now has a remaining 35-acre parcel that has timber on it, and that's not his goal. His goal was to have a home site there. So these are some of the issues that raise because you're only doing these partial acquisitions. And what that's done in the past is it's had these groups have negotiated conservation easements, and for the long term that's caused property owner problems and caused the conservation group problems. Here's an example. It didn't show up too well. That red square is the 40-acre parcel. You can see running right through it is a marshland. It's salt marsh. It's a valuable fish habitat, and the group wishes to purchase only that portion that's fish habitat out of that 40-acre parcel. Well, what happens is that the property owner purchased this property a year and a half, 2 years ago for home site purposes. It's in an area that's transitioning. It's near Newport. It's in the coastal area. There's a lot of value in the home site. So as a real estate appraiser, if I value this marshland, which may have, I don't think I'm going to get myself into trouble, may have value of between $500 and maybe even $1,000 an acre, they're going to have to throw another, after they buy that land, they're going to have to throw another $100,000, maybe $150,000 on top of that to offset the damage to the owner that's lost his home site. So all of a sudden that marshland becomes very valuable. The goal of the property owner in this case was to have a home site. The goal of the buyer was to have some marshland, and the land use regulations have this little quirk in them that doesn't allow that to happen. If there was a house on that property, they could do the transition. They could do the transaction, but there's no house there. The property owner has no interest in building a house for the next 10, 15 years. This is a retirement home. And they want to hold it for future development. Also, what happens is, well, let's see, let me keep on track here. I'm not paying attention here. Okay. So what I saw happening as I was analyzing this property is that there's a need to provide more flexibility between the negotiations between buyers of conservation parkland and the objectives of the seller. It goes for better negotiation. You can say, move that line here, move the line there. You know, here's what I'm trying to achieve, here's what you're trying to achieve. Fee ownership becomes a more feasible option as opposed to easement acquisitions. This enhances the stewardship of the conservation values, also helps out the property owner in that it's a clear demarcation of what his ownership responsibilities are and what the conservation group's responsibilities are. Does not change current land use regulations. This proposal doesn't change anything from happening that wouldn't have happened before House Bill 3365. If it goes away, they can still do it through conservation easements. The property owner can still put his home there. The conservation groups still could come in and buy the entire property if they could get the money together. All it does is just facilitates the negotiation between the two people to have come up with a better overall management plan and ownership plan and have the land use regulations facilitate that. Also, another perspective that I understand, and I'm not really involved in this, as I heard from the conservation groups, is that the county assessors get real nervous when a lot of these valuable properties are going off the tax rolls. Well, this would allow the most valuable portion of those properties to remain, and the conservation group focuses on the lands that they're trying to acquire, and the property owner continue his development program, and that addresses that issue. So if you're looking at timberland, these are areas like it was back here, they weren't interested in the timberland, they were interested in the marshland that happened to be part of this larger timberland tract. I think that's basically as far as I need to go. I'd like to answer any questions if you have some, I'm sure.
Any questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Walker.
Okay, Matt.
Ron, did you have anything else you'd like to add?
Yes, Mr. Chair. And members of the committee, Ron, you were Farm Forest Land Specialist for the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Early in the session, we were contacted by Representative Dave Felder's office look at the situation that Mr. Walker had brought to them to see whether or not there was a way within the land use statutes that we could facilitate and resolve this kind of situation, and the Dash 3 amendments, I believe, will do that. They provide some flexibility so that the landowner who currently could, in the current configuration of that parcel, could build a house, but yet may want to sell some off, would be unable to, but under the bill, they would retain that building right and still be able to sell lands that they don't view as productive, and yet a public park provider or conservation group may find them something that they are interested in. So we felt that it provided some flexibility, and although in the past some of these areas that the conservation groups were interested in might have been protected through regulation, now that we're in the post-Measure 37 world, that is either not doable or has other consequences. So this was a way to move forward and provide benefits to the property owner and on the conservation side. So in fact, you've got both the development and the conservation, and that's what the department is attempting to facilitate. So we can support this bill.
Any questions for Mr. Eber? Representative Greenberg.
Sorry, I missed the beginning. I didn't need to be outside the room. Is the fiscal still remaining with this version? There's a fiscal from here. Sorry.
You just stole my thunder.
Well, they can't. Tell me which I can ask, which I can't.
There looks to be an unfunded mandate here.
Well, I thought there was a fiscal involved.
There is a fiscal, yes.
Mm-hmm. You want to talk? It says you have to change a goal in order to do this?
No. Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlake, I don't have the exact fiscal in front of me, but for a provision like this, it would have been a rule amendment. We normally, at the end of every session, update our Goal 3 or Goal 4 rules to be consistent with the statutes, and so this would be one that in the normal course of updating our rules, we would simply add this provision in there. Under ORS 197-646, it would take effect and apply directly whether we change the rule or not. And if I might, one other comment, this provision is quite, so there's already an ability to do something like this in farm zones. This provision in this bill basically extends it to forest and mixed farm forest zones.
Thank you, Paul, sir. But you put a fiscal on every, it's a modest fiscal, and it wouldn't send us away to use something, but you put a fiscal on every single thing that might amend the Rule 4, even though at the end of the session you're going to have to amend Rule 4 for anything that affected it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlake, my understanding is that's what we're required to do, to indicate if it would lead us to some action, then we would put in that we would do that, even if it's because we don't know how many bills are going to pass. If this were the only bill, then this would be what we would do. But when there's a number of bills, we do it all as one at one time.
And if I may, one more. So, I mean, usually this says this is not anticipated in the agency's budget. You don't have anticipated in your agency budget the idea that at the end of the legislative session you're going to have to amend some of the rules?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlake, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I have to check.
It just seemed a little odd to me, and I was.
It's a good question. Max, do you know the answer on the, and I still got Art Slack here, and that's where the unfunded mandate question comes in that there's part of the fiscal says, according to the Association of Oregon Counties, this bill will require counties to amend their zoning ordinances. AOC believes this process will involve staff time and public hearings before each county planning commission at an estimated cost of $5,000 to $10,000 per county. That'd be $360,000 this bill could cost. But I don't know why that. Are you prepared to respond to that?
Yes,
I assume that. So, would you come up, Mark? Thank you, panel.
Mr. Chair, if I may, the amendment language came out recently, and I don't believe that AOC has evaluated it. The amendment. I think that the fiscal impact is based on the bill and the amended. I've gone over the amended the amendments with AOC, and I've told them about the concept. I don't think we've had a chance yet to look at the actual text of the amendment, and hopefully you can speak to that now. But I would like to point out that the amendment does include the word may. It doesn't require, it's not a mandate. It says that the regulatory authority may approve of divisions of land. And so we don't believe it's a mandate.
Okay. All right, would you come up?
I wanted to get this clear in my mind. Are you saying this is a land division?
It is. I'm not sure I understand your question. It's a division of land to. I'm not sure I understand the question. Maybe I should raise to Ronnie.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, for that land sale to go forward, say of the 40-acre parcel, would involve a request to the county to partition it.
Right.
Given that there's an 80, in some cases in forest zones, 160-acre minimum, they could not do it. So this bill is needed to authorize that partition less than the minimum lot size when the conditions are met.
Okay. Then why wouldn't that be a Measure 37 claim?
Chair Garrard, Representative Smith, because this bill is granting an ability to do something. It's not restricting somebody from doing anything. In fact, it actually retains the building right by allowing the sale and doesn't take it away.
Okay. Thank you.
Would you come up and... have you had a chance to look at these, Mark, these amendments?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. It might be unfair for us to ask you to evaluate them on this short of notice.
I just received that, Mr. Chair. I just received that from my wife.
Okay.
And I was concentrating on a prior bill that you have, so I really haven't had an opportunity to go through those in any kind of detail.
Okay. Any further questions of this panel? Seeing none, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Glenn Stoneberg.
Good afternoon, Chair Garrard, members of the committee. I'm Glenn Stoneberg of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. I'm here to oppose this bill, not so much for what it, the division of properties, but oppose the granting of special favor to conservation organizations. Now, these organizations have in the past, and I believe will in the future, have a tendency to oppose production agriculture and timber. And many times, these same organizations are the ones that will file lawsuits against the people that I represent, or join in on lawsuits against people that I represent, and that's cattle producers. Now, beyond our differences with our natural differences with these groups and natural resource production, these organizations are also known for purchasing lands because of their 501c3 status, the IRS status as a nonprofit. These lands are then removed from the tax rolls of the counties. And rural counties are hurting pretty bad presently for schools and law enforcement, nursing homes, and such. And as production ag lands, they pay taxes. But if they get the special favor and they get into the so-called conservation organizations, they don't pay taxes. And further objection is that often these conservation organizations have utilized, I guess I'll call it a weakness within our agencies that do some funding and our tax codes to basically scam the taxpayers. So we ask no more special favors for conservation organizations. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, Mr. Stoneberg, Representative Greenlee?
Now, does your organization oppose churches buying land to build a church?
We've never objected to that.
But that takes land off the tax rolls. You don't?
Chair Gerard, Representative Greenlee, what this bill is to grant special favors to conservation organizations, and that's what we object to. But we're not talking about churches as a conservation organization.
If I may, I just want to make sure I understand what the Calvin was saying. I heard you say the problem was they take land off the tax rolls, that nonprofit organizations take land off the tax rolls, and I just wondered if you were opposing all nonprofit organizations buying property because the poor rural counties that need the taxes, I heard you say. So, I mean, would you oppose land, buying private land for schools or for churches or for a Red Cross headquarters or for a hospital because they all take, or for your headquarters?
Chair Gerard, Representative Greenlee, we did not say that we oppose all purchases that take land off the tax roll. We're just talking about those conservation organizations because of their status taking the land off the tax rolls and out of ag production.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Mr. Dundick, Representative Summer.
Sir, could you give me an example of how conservation groups profit at the expense of taxpayers?
I wouldn't, Chair Gerard, Representative Sumner, I wouldn't say that in every case they do this, but we know of a number of cases where, let me say, if this were a 200-acre farm, ranch, or whatever, and it was for sale, and it was for sale for mathematical purposes, I'll say for $1,000 an acre. So the asking price was $200,000. And if one of these organizations came along and offered that farmer or rancher, they'll say, just sell me half of that piece of land. Just sell me half of it. But we'll give you $2,000 an acre. So you think of the end, you say, wait a minute. That's the same as the asking price for the entire parcel. Said, yes, we'll give you $200,000 for half, and then you donate the other half. We've already established the selling price at $2,000 an acre. So they get a tax write-off to this charitable organization because of their status for $200,000. Then what does that group, I won't name the group, but what will that group do with that land oftentimes? Because, as was mentioned earlier, this may be considered sensitive environmental habitat. Wetlands, marshlands, migratory bird refuge type lands. Then they will sell this to the federal government, to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And what's the price? Well, they bought it for $2,000 an acre. There's 200 acres total. That's $400,000. So they doubled the amount that they started with. And guess what has happened is, where did they get their first $200,000? Oftentimes they've gotten it from agencies like OREB within this state that takes part of our lottery funds, allows them to get a grant to buy lands for conservation reasons. That's what's happening.
Any other questions, Mr. Chairman?
Thank you.
Sounds like a heck of a board game. You know, roll dice and move around the board by shuffling acres and that kind of. Actually, we had such a thing happen and I think, Glenn, you're probably aware, but in Klamath County, on a portion of land just north of Upper Klamath Lake, where exactly what you described took place.
Chair Gerard, that's right, and there's other places in the state that's happening as we speak.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, actually, I do have a question now that you've raised it.
Representative Nola.
I'm not sure I heard. Maybe Representative Sumner was satisfied with the answer to his question, but I thought the question was for a specific example. And what I think I've heard is kind of a prototype rather than a specific example. Is there a specific example that you can name and demonstrate the negative impact that you're asserting?
Chair Gerard, Representative Nola, I think Representative Gerard has a specific example in his area. I could, if you would like, I can get you a specific example in another area, if that would be helpful. I wanted to give answer to his question is because I made the, I think my testimony was that, but basically there was a scam going on. I didn't say any more than that, and I don't know if I was totally answering this question, but what to demonstrate what was a, what I mean by scam.
So. Well, and Mr. Chair, if I might, that's a pretty strong word, and I think what we're entitled to hear a specific example if that's the allegation that's being made.
Chair Gerard, Representative Nolan, I will get you a specific example and bring it to this committee.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, can I follow
that? Representative Greenlee.
Is your assertion that these things are illegal, like what just happened, that the taxpayer took advantage of an illegal tax dodge?
Chair Gerard, Representative Greenlee, they're totally legal.
And I hope you're doing your job in reporting those taxpayers to the federal government. You could get, your organization could get a 10% bounty, I think, or maybe a 25% bounty.
Excuse me, they are totally legal.
Oh, then what's your definition of a scam?
Chair Gerard, Representative Greenlee, I consider it a scam when, in the guise, if you will, of conservation, that we must save the planet or save the environment, that these organizations aren't really truly doing that. I understand their argument. They'll say, well, we should be able to receive some kind of a finder's fee to find these wonderful few great places that we must save, and then a brokerage fee by purchasing these and then turning them over to the federal government. But what hurts me personally is working for ranchers is that these same groups then can use that legal way of obtaining funds, and then they're the ones we'll see on the list of the plaintiffs that will be filing lawsuits to put our people out of business. That's my concern. Legal? Yes, they're legal. I'm not saying they're not legal. But I'm just bringing the facts, bringing the reason why we object to this, happening for more special favors for those groups that call themselves conservation organizations. I don't even see a definition in here for what is a conservation organization.
One more, and I'll quit.
Hello?
Is your organization a nonprofit organization, and do you get special favors because of that, like tax breaks and other special favors?
Chair Gerard, Representative Greenlee, we're a 501c4. We're simply not for profit. We're not charitable. We don't get special charitable status, no.
You don't get tax. It's not a tax exempt organization.
Chair Gerard, Representative Greenlee, we do not pay taxes as an organization, no. We file reports every year for all of our information is public information, but we are not a charitable organization, so we don't get people don't get a tax break if they contribute to us.
Any other questions of Mr. Stumberg? Thank you, Lord.
Thank you.
Committee, just to, if I can recall this as accurately with my faulty memory, when I was a county commissioner in Klamath County, we had a 160-acre parcel of land located north of Upper Klamath Lake. And at that time, there was great consideration given to putting dikes up around that property to fill it with water that would enlarge the ability to store water for irrigation purposes and to protect the endangered species. The conservation group came in, bought the property, perfectly legal. You have a private owner who wants to sell the land, even though they were raising cattle on it at the time. The owner saw it more profitable to sell the land to the conservation agency, did so. The agency then did indeed give half of it away and then sell the other half to the federal government at the inflated price. Nothing illegal about it. It's a private sales transaction between two private parties as far as the county was concerned. But that type of maneuvering is taking place in a lot of the areas. At least it was 5 or 6 years ago when I was a commissioner. So, and that's my total recollection of the incident. No, the property was in essence left the way it is and still remains that way today. Nothing happened to the land.
Could we not have had the same result between purely private buyers buying a property, parceling it off, and
absolutely
selling it for a profit?
And that's my response, is it was entirely too... It was a real estate between two private individuals, and the county or the state had no business muddling into it. But that's what ultimately wound up with the property, is that nothing changed except the ownership. And it was perfectly legal. So, but the birds were happy because the water stayed on the land. And don't ask me why I got off on that one. Except that it was part of the lesson. It was part of the lesson I learned that phosphate from birds contribute more to the demise of the soil than do cattle. And I don't remember what the proportions were, however, but birds are worse than cattle.
Swans, I think.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to close real quickly. Close the public hearing on 3365.
There ought to be a footnote on Friday afternoon hearings, I think.
We have House Bill 3284. We'll open a public hearing on 3284. Sam.
House Bill 3284, remove sunset provision authorizing industrial land development buildings and site size and type on lands located outside the urban growth boundaries of cities outside the Willamette Valley. It is very similar to one you had previously seen. 24, I think it was 34, that dealt with commercial and industrial, and also 2162. You've seen it before.
We have two people signed up, plus you have just been given a letter from Lane Shetterly, DLCD, and we'll have Art Schlack and Elon Hassan come forward. This is great. We have for and against, just two people to talk. Opponent, proponent.
This has $115,000 fiscal.
Yes.
I believe that's correct.
I mean, it's going to lose me.
There is no referral on it that I know of. Sam?
No, there is no subsequent referral.
That means we're not required to send it to Ways and Means, but we've not got to.
Who would like to?
We didn't know the fiscal one she assigned it to us.
Go ahead. Other person.
Sure.
Hi, Chair Gerard, members of the committee. My name is Elon Hassan, lobbyist for 1000 Friends of Oregon, testifying in opposition to 3284. I think this is the fourth bill that addresses the issue of urban scale development in rural industrial lands, and it's the coincidentally fourth time we're proposing it. And it's the main thing is there's a work group with LCDC that is looking at this issue. I understand they met this morning and actually made some progress, and we'd like to see them complete their work. And that's why we're voting this.
Any questions? Mr. Hassan. Art?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Art Slap with the Association of Oregon Counties. I won't take a lot of your time at this point. This bill is exactly the same as House Bill 2162, which you have heard previously. It removes the sunset that was established last session by House Bill 2614. The sunset was placed on the bill because of some concern regarding the impact that industrial development in eastern and southern Oregon without the building size limitation that is currently in the LCDC administrative rule. We proposed to remove that sunset. We do not believe, and we have demonstrated to you, there's only been three sites that have been developed at this point, but it's only been really operational for about a year and a half plus at this point using these provisions. We think it's a good opportunity for industrial development in eastern and southern Oregon and maybe along the coast, and we would urge that the sunset be removed.
Any questions of Mr. Slack? Thank you, gentlemen. Committee, there may be an amendment coming to this bill, and so we're going to put it back up, I think, on Monday. We'll put it back up on Monday, and if the party is interested in coming before the committee to amend the bill, we'll hear it at that time. But we will close. Anyone else here like to speak on House Bill 3284? Okay, seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on 3284. Committee, we have now completed hearing every bill brought by any representative in this body, and I think this committee is to be congratulated in that regard of giving a public hearing to every bill from every representative. Next week we'll do the cleanup work of trying to get out. As you know, Friday is the last day for the committee to hear House bills. So we will, on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, try to clear up all the loose strings, so to speak, and prepare for Senate bills, which will begin on September 9th. Now, excuse me.
In special session?
That was not as difficult.
Oh, yesterday.
Just
no.
I think Representative Nolan said it best when she said it's Friday afternoon. Anyway, we will begin that week of May 9th hearing Senate bills. And we will start off, in case you want to take the next week to look at it, at the, I think it's,
Omnibus?
857?
887?
No, 857, which is the Coos Bay South Slough question. We'll start our Senate bills looking at that.
We have 887 too.
We also have Senate Bill 887, yes.
What's happening with 1037? Is that?
1037 is the Omnibus 37 bill, Measure 37 bill.
Have you heard what state that's in? Will we be getting that?
See, how would I describe it?
Heard the date. September what? The
Representative Nolan, you're out of order.
Mr. Chair, you've used the word Mickey Mouse in the press before.
Yes, I wouldn't use the word Mickey Mouse in regards to. I can say this on 1037. It would appear at this point to be a hit and run victim. It has a lot of things that I don't think are too agreeable to this side of the building. But
when we
hopefully this committee will have an opportunity to evaluate that for ourselves.
You've talked about doing our own run at Measure 37 stuff. Will we have the opportunity to reconsider a House bill for that if that's the
Representative Greenlee, I give you my word, we will do that.
Absolutely. One way or the other.
Matter of fact, I think on Friday we have a couple bills of Representative Ackerman in regards to the compensation issue, so that we may retain those bills for possible use. So Yes.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Ackerman.
Yes. Well, if the Senate measure is hit and run, when do we declare it dead?
Probably about as soon as it gets over here.
It's still there.
Representative Nolan.
That's fine, as long as we don't leave two victims on the highway and nothing to implement the voters' will. We have to be mindful ourselves that nothing becomes law unless it passes both chambers. So we're going to have to find some middle ground here.
Absolutely right. We'll need your help to do that. Seeing no further business and knowing that it's time to go home, I will adjourn the House Committee on Land Use. See you Monday.